Epilogue. Chapter 1. The earth is smelling of March and violets. Snowdrops are showing above the damp mold. The furrows of the field are shimmering purple. We walk down a path through the woods, Billy and Cozzola in front, Valentin and I behind them. It is the first time for months that we have all been together. We do not often see one another. Carl has lent us his new car for the day. He has not come himself. He has not the time. He has been making a mint of money these last few months, for the mark is falling, and that favors his business. So his chauffeur has driven us out. "What are you doing exactly, Valentin?" I ask. "Going the round of the fairs," he replies, "with the swing boats." I look at him in surprise. "Since when?" "Oh, a long time. My partner, you remember her? She soon chucked me. She dances in a restaurant now. Foxtrots and tangos. There's more demand for that these days. And, well, you see, an old army hobo's not smart enough for that sort of thing."
"Do swing boats bring in much, then?" I ask.
He shakes his head.
"Don't talk about it. Not enough to live on, yet too much to die on, if you follow me. And this everlasting traipsing about. We're on the road again tomorrow. To Krefeld, this time. Properly up the pole, as you might say, Ernst. What's become of Jupp, do you know?"
I shrug my shoulders. "Left town, I think. Same as Adolf. One never sees anything of them."
"And Arthur?"
"He's well on his way to being a millionaire," I reply.
"He knows a thing or two,"
nods Valentin sadly. Cozzola halts and stretches his arms.
"Well, boys, it's grand walking, no mistake. If only a man hadn't to be out of work in order to do it."
"Don't you think you'll get something again soon?" asks Philly.
Ferdinand shakes his head.
"It's not so easy. I'm on the blacklist, you see. Not docile enough. Still, a man's healthy, that's something. I borrow a bit off Tjaden now and then to keep me going. He's well dug in among the suet."
We call a halt at a clearing in the wood. Billy hands around a box of cigarettes that Carl has given him. Valentin's face brightens. We sit down and smoke. The tops of the trees creak softly. A few tits are twittering, and the sun is already strong and warm. Billy yawns largely, and then stretches out on his overcoat. Cozzola makes himself a sort of pillow of moss, and lies down likewise. Valentin is sitting pensively on the trunk of a beech tree, watching a green ground beetle. I look at the old familiar faces, and in a moment everything seems changed. Here we are, all squatting together again as so often before, only we are fewer now. But are we really together still? Cozzola pricks up his ears. Out of the distance comes a sound of voices, young voices. It will be the Wandervögel, the birds of passage, making a first ramble with their guitars and their ribbons this silver misted day. We used to do the same before the war, Ludwig Breyer and Georg Rahe and I. I lean back and think of those times, the evenings around the campfire, the folk songs, the guitars, and the lovely nights full of stars over the tent. That was just our youth. In the Wandervögel of those days was all the fresh romance and enthusiasm of youth that afterwards still lingered on in the trenches a short while, only to collapse at last in 1917 under the awful horrors of the Battle of Machines. The voices are coming nearer. I prop myself on my arms and raise my head to see the procession go by. It is strange. Only a few years back we still belonged to all that, and now it seems as if they were an entirely new generation, a generation to follow ours, that can take up again the things that we had to let fall. Shouts resound. A full chime, almost a choir. Now but a single voice again, indistinct, not yet to be understood. twigs break, and the ground trembles to many footsteps. Again a shout. Again the footsteps. They stop. Silence. Then, sharp and clear, a command.
Cavalry approaching on the right. By squads, right wheel. Double march.
Cazola jumps up. I also. We stare at one another.
Are we bewitched? What can that mean?
Already they are breaking cover from the undergrowth in front of us. They run to the edge of the wood and throw themselves on the ground.
Range 400,
snaps the same voice as before.
Covering fire. Fire!
A rattling clatter. A long line of 16 and 18-year-old boys lying side by side along the edge of the wood. They all wear waterproof jackets with leather girdles buckled about them like soldiers' belts. All are dressed alike, gray jackets, puttees, caps with badges. Uniformity has been deliberately emphasized. Each has a walking stick with a steel point, with which he is battering on the tree trunks in imitation of machine gun fire. But from under the warlike caps, there look out young, red-cheeked children's faces. Watchful and excited, they peer away to the right in search of approaching cavalry. They do not see the tender miracle of the violets among the brown leaves, nor the purple bloom of the coming spring that lies over the plowed fields, nor the downy, soft fur of the leveret that is hopping there along the furrows. Ah, yes, they do see the leveret, but they are aiming their sticks at it, and the clatter on the tree trunks swells mightily. Behind them stands a powerful fellow with a bit of a paunch, also in waterproof jacket and puttees. He beefs out his commands.
Slow fire! 200 yards!
He has a pair of spyglasses and is observing the enemy.
Holy Jesus! I exclaim in horror.
Cazola has recovered from his astonishment.
What sort of bloody nonsense do you call this? He growls.
But he lands himself in hot water. The leader, who is now joined by two confreres, glares and thunders. The soft spring air is loud with bold words.
Shut your mugs, you damned shirkers! You enemies to the fatherland! You dirty push of traitors!
The boys now join in eagerly. One shakes his small fist.
We'll have to give you a good hiding, he pipes up in his high-pitched voice.
Cowards,
chimes in another.
Pacifists,
cries a third.
These Bolsheviks must all be rooted out, or Germany will never be free,
shouts a fourth glibly and pat.
That's right,
the leader pats him on the shoulder and makes toward us.
Run them off, lads!
At that moment, Vili wakes up. He has been asleep until now. He is still a good soldier in that. If he lies down for long, he at once goes to sleep. He stands up. The leader pulls up short at once. Vili looks about him in surprise and explodes into laughter.
What's this? A fancy dress ball? He asks.
Then he grasps the situation.
Well, well, so there you are, he growls at the leader. We've been wondering what has become of you for a hell of a time now. Yes, yes, I know, the fatherland. It's all yours by deed of settlement, eh? Everyone else is a traitor. So? Funny thing, then, that 3/4 of the German army were traitors. Just you hop off now, you jackanapes. Why can't you let the kids enjoy the few years that are left to them, while they need still know nothing about it?
The leader draws off his army, but the wood is spoiled for us. We go back into the village. Behind us, rhythmical and syncopated, echoes the cry,
Front, Heil! Front, Heil! Front, Heil! Front, Heil!
Vili clutches his hair.
If anyone had said that to the lads up the line.
Yes, says Cazola sourly. So it begins all over again.
Just outside the village, we find a little beer garden where already there are a few tables standing out in the open. Though Valentin is due back at his swing boats in an hour, we still sit ourselves down for a quick one to make the best of our time, for who knows when we shall be together again. A pale sunset is coloring the sky. I cannot help thinking still of that scene back in the wood. My God, Villy, I say. Here we are alive still and only just out of it. How in God's name is it possible there should already be such people to do that sort of thing?
There will always be such people,
answers Villy, unusually earnest and thoughtful.
But don't forget us. We are here too. And there's a lot of people think as we do. Most of them, probably. Ever since then, you know, since Ludwig and Albert, all sorts of things have been going around in my head, and I've come to the conclusion that everybody can do something in his own way, even though he may have nothing but a turnip for a head. My holidays are over next week, and I'll have to go back to the village as a schoolteacher again. And, you know, I'm positively glad of it. I mean to teach my youngsters what their fatherland really is. Their homeland, that is, not a political party. Their homeland is trees, fields, earth. None of your fulsome catchwords. I've considered it all on and off a long time. I've decided that we're old enough now to do some sort of a job. And that's mine. It's not big, I admit, but sufficient for me. And I'm no Goethe, of course.
I nod and look at him a long while. Then we set off. The chauffeur is waiting for us. The car glides softly through the slowly gathering twilight. We are already approaching the town, and the first lights have shown up, when there mingles with the crunching and grinding of the tires a long-drawn, hoarser, throaty sound. In an easterly direction across the evening sky, there moves a wedge-shaped flight, a flock of wild geese. We look at it. Kozola is about to say something, but then is silent. We are all thinking the same thing. Then comes the town with streets and noise. Valentin climbs out, then Villy, then Kozola.